You're listening to Clock Radio Speakers with Armand and Doc. And now, side B.
Let's talk about Lil Uzi Vert.
Okay, we can be real quick with this. First of all,
yeah.
Is this one of the worst mixed albums you've heard that we've talked about on this show?
I didn't think it was that bad.
That album is mixed really bad. It sounds
worse.
Like a bunch of roughs.
I've heard worse.
Nah. Okay. That took away from the project. Like, I'm like three songs in and I'm like, wait a minute. The chick's voice who comes in at the beginning, she's just like loud, like really loud.
Yeah.
Like unnecessarily loud. Like, I got high and forgot to turn. Like, was it a thing where all the levels got mixed right and then the engineer sneezed and moved all the knobs and messed everything up? And they were like, no, we need to have the album turned in now. We don't have time. Just turn it in.
For a guy who claims to be original, which he talks about a couple times in this album, like, if you drew a triangle and, like, at one corner you had Travis Scott, the other corner you had Young Thug, and the other corner you had Lil Wayne, wouldn't he just be right in the middle? Like... And on the one hand, I get it. Like, so much of what is trending in hip hop is so fluid right now. Like, there's a little bit of Future in there as well. And I undoubtedly, some of these guys are influencing others. But like, there's a lot of him where I'm like, I mean, I said Young Thug and there's a little bit of that. There's a lot of Travis and back and forth between Travis and Auto-Tune Lil Wayne on here. Like, am I crazy?
No. I don't know. There were two records, and let me pull up the track list. Two records on this album to me that stood out in a good way. One in particular I actually liked, but, you know, I'm a little biased.
Yeah. The records I like on here are the records where, ironically, this is going to both be ironic and not ironic. I think he's better when he has less processing on his vocals. Like Neon Guts with Pharrell, that beat is ridiculous.
I really want a better mix with that. You can hear like Neptune's keys in it, but they're not out. They're like buried in that beat. If that beat is already nuts, but if that would have been mixed better, oh my God.
Pharrell's great on it. Like, Pharrell, I think that
Uzi's not bad on that either.
No, he's not. I mean, like that's what I mean. Like this is I don't really want to hear like kind of brooding vertical. Like that's not really
brooding vertical.
That's not really the wave I'm trying to be on right now.
Yeah.
But that I get it, like EXO Tour Life, like that's kind of his thing. I get that. But he shows other sides. Like, actually, I really like For Real.
For Real was the other record.
That beat is fantastic.
Those are the two records for me.
And he sounds better without the auto-tune, because there's like multi, like some records he goes pretty light in the auto-tune, some it's just straight up auto-tune, and then some it's all these like, you know, he's trying to like Young Thug it with like unintelligible lyrics. It's like, I know that's the trend or whatever, but like,
and if you're gonna Young Thug it, like you gotta be in a pocket, because as unintelligible as Young Thug is, his flow is probably, shoot, it's up there with being the best in hip-hop currently. I'll say it.
One thing that really disappointed me about this, like, and you can see how all these different artists are influencing one another. The record with Abel, Unfazed, that hook is just, this is the futurization of hip hop. It's just a single word repeated at one, in one key. And then you just drop it down a bit and you say the exact same thing. It's like Future has done like three dozen songs with a hook like this. And the fact that he brings on The Weeknd to do, who, number one, can write songs, and number two, can do more than just repeat a single word on a hook, but that's what he does. But you know what? Wouldn't be surprised if that record blew up.
I got a question for you, Doc.
Yeah.
Is there a good song that has a Weeknd feature?
Crew Love?
What? Yeah, that's how far back you gotta go.
No. Wait, there was a record on... Maybe it's Travis. Anyway, he's had a couple. Not many. You're right. It's not many.
Yeah, like, I feel like they get these, like, depressing, weirdo beats, and they're like, yeah, put The Weeknd on this. I almost wonder, like, if Weeknd feels a way when they're like, yeah, man, we should get on the record. And he's like, cool. And he, like, has all these new ideas and stuff that he wants to try, and then it just sounds like something that The Weeknd would do. Yeah, we think you could do this. And he's like, all right.
I didn't mind Pray for Love. That was the record. Travis Scott, Pray for Love. I didn't mind that one.
Okay. Yeah, I'm good off of 99% of the Weeknd features.
Okay. I don't disagree. I mean, I almost feel like people don't really know how to use them. It goes one of two ways. Either it's just not really good at all, or they just want the Able stimulus package.
Yeah, I'm cool with that.
There's a record on here, How to Talk, produced by Wonder Girl. Somebody I was reading through Genius, because that's apparently what I do now, pointing out that it almost sounds like it samples Drake's Congratulations. And I was like, and even if it, what's that?
It's like Congratulations samples Viva La Vida.
Right, though. Right. But, and even if it doesn't, like, the biggest thing for me with that song is like, is when you get Uzi, he's a guy who like, he is definitely a young guy who like, almost kind of in a weird way, would have benefited from a little bit more of the old system where like, somebody would have worked with him. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. And I see Don Cannon with some credits all over here, and maybe he's helping or whatever, but like, in a sense, like, he could be really interesting, you know, with a little bit more diversity with beats, but you know, the success of songs like EXO Tour Life, I mean, you know, he's gonna go to what works, right? And plus, he's just crazy young, so
yeah,
it's interesting. Like, he kind of pulled the It Was Written Nas move, and he put the big single as the last track.
Yeah,
and I was trying to figure out why, but I think it's really just because like, it's such like a
old.
Not even old. It's also just like, what would you even transition to out of that song? Because it doesn't really sound like anything else on the album to me.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't hate this album. And actually, I mean, I hear stuff on here where I'm like, yeah, okay, I can kind of get it.
Yeah.
I can kind of see where he could do something. But yeah. The way the music climate works now, I just don't really know if he will.
Agreed.
And that's not a knock on him. It's just that like the incentives are there for him to churn out a bunch of music that's kind of like this. And to try to make Turn Up Records or even EXO Tour Life, which I will give him credit for, right? Feels like a Turn Up record, but is actually depressing. And I mean that like he's doing something a little different. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like he's got a little bit of his own style and his own sound. And so, you know, I get it. The move now will be tour, record, like get everything you can out of it. That's probably best for him like 2017, 2018. I don't know if that means that'll be, you know, best for his career overall, but we still have... That's the other thing. Like, we have no idea, like, how this generation that is coming up now, where they're just putting out all these random different projects. Like, when, you know, when somebody is hosting a podcast and they're, like, in their 30s and they're looking back and these are the guys they came up on, like, what are their careers going to look like? You know what I mean? Like, I was thinking about that today. I was like, you know, the era of, like, oh, an album every year, that used to be ambitious. That was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Album a year.
He said,
album a year? What, are you lazy? Like that's because that's not how this generation moves, you know?
Yeah.
What will we look back on in terms of, oh, you had this many albums? Like that number's not going to matter. Or what does a discography even look like? You know, we already had some of that in the transition from straight up albums to, well, is it a mixtape or an album? But now it's all fluid.
Yeah. I mean, and when we talk about Jay, he talks about that. How just the way that we listen to music is different. So he was kind of talking about it from a business perspective. But, you know, I look at my nephews, I look at my daughter, like they all just listen to music differently. They're not as concerned with the album. I mean, they are, like they know the albums are a thing, but they're not like, you know, Daniel Caesar was already popping. I had heard about him like almost a year and a half ago.
Right.
Just off of singles. He was fine. Like, I don't even know if people were clamoring for, we need a Daniel Caesar album. Just keep putting out singles.
Says you.
No, I mean like.
No, I'm just saying. Ironically.
Oh, well, don't worry.
Okay.
Listen, I'm signed to a record label. You know, I got to move a certain way.
It's true.
But I got to move a certain way for a reason, but we'll talk about that offline.
Anything else you want to say about Vertical?
Nah, I agree with your sentiments. It's not a bad album. And the two records that I like, I actually like for real and not just like, oh yeah, I could. No, like those records are really dope. But yeah, I'm cool.
You want to talk about your man, Sean Corey Carter, Jay-Z?
Are we done talking about albums already?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. So basically what I'm going to do is I'm going to let you rant. I'm going to go make a sandwich.
Don't, please.
And then when you're done, I'll respond with how I feel about the interview. Because you have been boiling.
Boiling is a strong term.
It definitely strong. And warranted.
Jay-Z was interviewed. I mean, God, I'm using the biggest quotations humanly possible. Interviewed on Rap Radar by Elliot Wilson and what's the other guy?
B-Dot.
Let
me say this.
Yes, sir.
Elliot Wilson is a really bad journalist.
Elliot Wilson works for Tidal.
I understand that.
So
he was asking, and he's done that consistently on Rap Radar. B-Dot is far and away, like, has strapped Elliot Wilson to his back and is running as fast as he can. But because Elliot Wilson is the name, Elliot Wilson gets the credit. Elliot Wilson did not ask one good question this for the entire 2 hours. B-Dot asked good questions. Elliot Wilson did not.
It was pretty hard to listen to him. Part of this really kind of, and I've been overusing the Trumpisms. This really felt like if Trump was being interviewed by Fox News. And what I mean by that is there were a lot of softball questions. There was a lot of adoration. And I get it. This Jay-Z, right? And so I had to think about that. I had to reevaluate sort of my initial listen to this and go, don't think of this as like journalism. Think of this as two guys in the music industry, one of whom works for Tidal, having a conversation with Jay. Because this was not journalism. There was all sorts of ridiculous assertions that went unchallenged. There was all sorts of stuff that happening in this this interview that just caused me to. I was sitting there like practically. I'm like risking driving my car. I'm like, I got to take notes on this. Like, man, the most fascinating part about this, and the reason why I'm glad that I listened to this, it was really fascinating to watch. Like this. This is like watching the myth making of Jay-Z happen in real time. And Jay is really good at this, right? Jay did this with Reasonable Doubt, because don't let anybody fool you. A lot of people thought that Reasonable Doubt was good, but not great in 1996. But he built the myth over the years. And you know what? It actually is a great album. But like, there's all sorts of this stuff surrounding Jay that has built up over the years. And this was like watching the myth being made in real time. And that myth is that 444 might possibly be his best album, which is so ludicrous. I almost didn't even know where to begin. Like, even if you like this album, and I know people do, and that's totally fine. Considering Jay's catalog, I just can't even fathom how that's possible. I don't know.
It's actually really easy.
The fact that people say that, I'm questioning, for what reasons were you even fans of Jay-Z in the first place? I really struggle with it. I do, because like, it's just not there. But I don't know that. And honestly, I don't even know if that's the most troubling aspect of this interview, but before I keep ranting.
Yeah. I'm just letting you rant.
Cause I want to hear what you have to say about this.
I thought the interview was great. I thought it was great. It was really enjoyable. It was nice to hear his perspective on some things. You could hear some spin on some stuff. But I mean, I know what to expect with the Jay-Z album or with the Jay-Z interview, or with the Jay-Z anything.
Right.
So the spin, when I hear it, I understand it. And I don't really get mad at it, because I get it. At the end of the day, it's business. But to hear his perspective on so many things, to hear the album breakdown, to hear Jay again getting candid, this is why the album is important, because it opens up all of these different conversations. This is why I take 444 over Flower Boy. You can't have a 2-hour conversation about Flower Boy. It's a great album, but you can't talk about it beyond music. You just can't.
Here's the problem, though. I don't trust that Jay is sincere.
Then that's on you.
Is it? Because yes. Jay has spent his entire career selling us the myth of Jay-Z. Why would I believe him now?
That he decides that at 48 years old with 3 kids and a wife that he recently cheated on, that he decided that that was the most important thing to do. And at the beginning of the album, he decides that he wants to kill Jay-Z. Side note, I'm curious to know what part two was. How do you have a part two to a record called Kill Jay-Z? Now he decides that he wants to like reveal all this stuff. Sure. It was packaged and presented in a way that like was transparent, but still, didn't tell everything, and I don't need to know everything. I don't, because that's none of my business. But for the bad guy to come back and say, a lot of the things that I told you about were wrong, here's where I am right now. It is what I've been asking for artists to do on this show for years. And nobody wants to do it. Now you're going to see, I hope you're going to see 555, 333, and 218. You'll see that everywhere now. You're going to see that everywhere now. But no, I don't. I don't doubt that Jay is sincere. Do I feel like he's telling us everything? No. But I don't want him to. It's not my business. But the album, and that's the point that he talked about. Like, now all of a sudden, the album becomes a narrative about his infidelities. And that's two songs. It's a 13-track album if you include the bonus records. There's so much more that he's talking about that it comes down to, did he cheat on his wife? And is he sincere? He even confirmed our Clock Radio speaker, well, my Clock Radio speaker's theory, that the flow came from just him getting thoughts out.
By the way, the spin surrounding his spin for his explanation for his flow, I almost choked because I was eating breakfast at that time.
Here's my retort to that. If he would have polished those records, then I would have thought he was insincere. If he was rapping really good on 444, I would have been like, wait a minute, hold on. That to me is more insincere than...
I don't know, man, because you rapped about a lot of personal stuff in your life and you didn't forget how to rap when you did it. I'm being harsh.
Yeah, but I've been doing this for years, though. This is Jay's, as he said, this is an album full of You Must Love Me's.
Yeah, and he managed to rap well on You Must Love Me.
That's 97, though. That's 20 years ago.
I swear to God, am I misremembering? I swear that what I heard him say was something effective like, this was art because it like came out this way, or something that affected this interview. And I was just like, the myth making knows no ends.
But that's the same thing that you say about like a Tupac, who often would record 5 songs in a night, often wouldn't do his verses over. It's like music in a bottle. I share that same sentiment. I don't like doing verses a million times. I don't. I like recording my verses maybe twice. If I have to record more than 2 or 3 times, I'm frustrated and I'm flustered. It's a bottle. It's a moment that I want to capture.
When doesn't you make it record, good.
You just don't. That's what I said to you on text. I said, yo, you're not going to like this interview because you don't like the album.
I'm trying to understand how people could like it. Like, really? Like, it's so...
I'm telling you why people like it, and you're like, no, this is not why people like it. And I'm like, yes, it is.
This everything, every explanation he had just felt so contradictory and so, like, self-congratulatory in a way. Man.
I'll say this. We'll see. I'm curious to know, because he kept the set list to his hip. I don't want any leaks from the tour. I'm not going to watch anything. When I go, I want to sit and I want to enjoy it. And I want to be surprised. I don't want no set list. I don't even want to see what he does in Made in America. So I'm curious to know, because Elliot kind of called him out like, yo, are we going to do like Tom Ford and then go into a record like 444? I'm extremely curious to know how this is going to play out. I think that'll play somewhat into your theory, depending on how he does this.
What do you mean?
Play into your theory of the insincerity, and if this is just something that he's selling or whatever. I mean, he is selling it, but like,
of course he's selling it. And by the way, the whole complaint about like the whole idea that, well, you know, he's only talking about infidelity in 2 songs. He had no problem letting that hype drive the sales that he then spent a portion of this podcast bragging about, which I can't wait to dive into and talk about. But like, you can't have it both ways. Like, he had no problem letting that buzz get him attention for this album. I mean, he called the album 444, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So then, yeah, guess what? People are going to talk about it. That's what you wanted them to talk about.
But it's not, I think it's a representation. I'm going to put my artist hat on. You could say, okay, that particular situation says that this entire album is going to be very transparent. So I'm going to use this one moment to create a complete experience of transparency. So if you're just dialing into that, the artist side of me says he used that to allow to understand or to show that people or to prepare people for, I'm going to talk about a lot of things. I mean, and if that was the case, then Beyonce wanted to did Lemonade. It's the same thing. It's just she was just singing instead of him rapping.
Also, an overhyped record.
We talked about that album. That album's not good. But he popped up at the end of the video.
Right.
It is what it is.
Tell me that you found the entire conversation about ranking his catalog just completely ridiculous.
No, I didn't find it ridiculous. The only thing that was weird was I was trying to remember what the response was online when Best of Both Worlds leaked. I don't remember if it was one of those things where people liked it because it was Jay and R. Kelly in 2002. I don't remember what the response was. Now, that album is trash.
Trash.
Both of them are.
Yeah. The second one's really bad.
The second one was really bad. I want my $14.99 back. But I don't remember what the response was at the time.
It was, there were like a handful of records. Honestly, I mean, this is the thing about Jay's catalog. I think people treated it like, well, this would be like a, you know, this is like the worst aspects of like a not so good Jay album with a couple records that, you know what I mean? Like, cause Jay's catalog up to that point was known for being wildly inconsistent, wildly inconsistent. So I don't know. My recollection of it was that people were like, you know, Body was okay. You know, people liked the intro, might have been one or two other records, but you know, after Blueprint, you can't follow a Blueprint with, let's go make a bunch of Trackmaster records with R. Kelly. Like, It was just a swing and a miss. It was a total cash grab. And so, it's, you know, the notion of, you know, that possibly being like Elliot Wilson, well, that R. Kelly record, I was like, nope.
Yeah,
nope,
I wasn't even sure. And yeah, it was that one and then bringing up Watch the Throne. I understand that more.
Watch the Throne
is nowhere near a classic.
I mean, Watch the Throone is far better than some of the other records you were talking about.
It's far better than the R. Kelly record. The only record that I disagreed with was Volume 2, but even that perspective, I understand. Like, the thriller comparison was really interesting.
It was ridiculous.
I would like to delve into it a little more, but I understand.
No, let's delve into it then. I mean, he was going for singles, right?
Yeah, I'm pulling up the album right now. I mean, and it made me... The interview made me go back and listen to records in Jay's catalog that I normally don't listen to. So like Volume 2.
We just did a Definitive 15 on Jay-Z, which you can listen to at Clark Pretty Speaker.
We did. And I didn't prepare for it because, you know, it's Jay-Z. I just listened to Volume 2 the other night. So, okay. So the singles off of Volume 2, Hard Knock Life, Jigga What, Jigga Who, Money Cash Hoes, Can I Get A... and Money Ain't a Thing, and I Guess You Can Do It's All Right. That's five singles, not six.
They count the Kid Capri record because that was his single.
They have to count that or It's All Right.
Yeah, It's All Right was a single.
It was, but it was a single
from Streets Is Watching.
Right.
But we talked about this album before on the show. That album is like an amalgamation of Jay getting the Irv Gotti / 98 Rough Rider stimulus package, right? He gets Can I Get It from Ja, he gets those Swiss records, you know, the Jermaine Dupri record, which was on his album first over the summer, the Kid Capri record, the record from Streets Is Watching. Like, that's a weird project. It's like Jay-Z, now that's what I call hits 98.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Does, if Volume 2's not a if Volume 2's not a classic,
it's not,
then why is the Black Album a classic?
I don't think it is. You're talking the wrong guy.
Most people think that it is. I have said that it's a classic because of the moments that it created. And yeah. I get it. And I think that Volume 2 created a lot of moments and took Jay to another place. So I understand why people put it where they put it.
Yeah.
It's not a personal classic, but I get it. So when they said those are the six albums, can't really argue that. I can say personally, sure. But I can't argue those six. I can't. It's not like they're saying, yeah, Blueprint 2. You know what I'm saying? Like, they didn't say, well, Kingdom Come. And again, Kingdom Come is better than people give it credit for. If people overrate Jay-Z albums, they definitely underrate the other ones, too. You underrate the Dynasty. You underrate Kingdom Come.
Volume 3.
I'll say you underrate Volume 3. You underrate Blueprint 3, low-key.
The first half. The second half. Mm.
Okay, yeah. Hate's really bad. Hater, Young Fat is terrible.
Hater.
That might be top five.
Hater,
you know what's funny? I went back and I listened to Volume 1. Can you believe that I actually, that was my first time hearing I Know What Girls Like for the first time, like a couple days ago.
Oh, no.
And I was like, compared to records like Hate, I'm like, this isn't terrible.
Boom, boom, ch. Yeah. It's not terrible. Stop it. It's terrible.
It's not terrible. Not like a record like Hate.
Now, hold on. You think it's not terrible, and then you get to the hook, which...
Yeah, it samples the 80s record.
It interpolates. It's not even a sample. They had someone sing that for real.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's terrible.
Yeah, I don't hate it. You kind of underrate volume. Like, the albums that... It's weird with Jay because all the other albums that are not, you know, classics without question or whatever, like, they just kind of skate over them. It's like, yeah, I mean, it wasn't that good. Like, no, Dynasty is crazy.
Dynasty is crazy. Volume 3 is crazy. Like, you know, those are, to me, like Black Album, Dynasty, Volume 3, those are all on the same level to me. Like, I get why people put Black Album as a classic. It's one of those, I think there are like three types of classics, right? There are like what you might call undisputed classics. There are personal classics. And then there are, I don't even know the best term for it, but like an example of this kind of classic are It's Dark and Hell is Hot. Get Rich or Die Trying.
Whoa. How was Get Rich or Die Trying not an undisputed classic?
I mean, because only half of that album is good.
Oh, boy.
I think you could say the same about 2001.
Oh, boy.
That album is about two-thirds perfect and then falls off a cliff.
Yeah, the end is bad. I'll give you that.
Right.
It's still a classic, though. We talked about not an album doesn't have to be perfect to be a classic.
Right. And I think the farther away you get from that, you get to these records that were like super important either for an artist or even just for like a sound at that time. Right. I think maybe I'm crazy. Like I. What?
I'm looking at Get Rich or Die Trying. Yeah. What records on here are you talking about?
All right. Hold on. We never did a G-Unit retro, did we?
Yeah, we did a shady one.
That's right.
They may not have aged well, but like, yo, this whole album.
I never really loved Heat. Bloodhound is bad.
What?
Oh, Back can... Down is.
We can,
like
we
my
can...
style. Poor Little Rich.
Poor Little Rich might be the worst song on the album.
It is. Yeah, I mean, the first run, you know, like it is a front heavy album.
I mean, it's
what
a
gangster patiently waiting, many men in the club.
Yeah, that's a nice run.
High All the Time is okay.
Yeah, that one's all
like,
right.
You listen to Heat.
It's crazy.
Well, the gun effect only goes so far. And then you're like, all right, I get it, Dre.
You're trash. You are trash.
Can you believe that Wangsta was really the record that kind of semi blew him up? Amazing.
Yeah, I can.
That record is no good.
Oh, you're killing me.
You Not Like Me? No good.
You Not Like Me is all right. Why is Your Life's on the Line on it?
It's a bonus track.
I know, but it's like, that record's like four years old.
Old, yeah.
Yeah, if I can't, should have came after In the Club. If you're going to run.
Sure. Just run.
Just run.
Right. But you know, you needed 16 regular tracks and 3 bonus tracks in 2003.
Yeah, you did. You did.
All right. Okay. Maybe this anyway, we're sort of off track, off topic here. But so, no, I mean, I don't know. I thought it's just, let me say this much though. The problem with this is like, because this was Jay's only like lengthy interview that he's done since the album, because it's with two fans of the album, it completely ignores that there have been a significant portion of people who were very on the album. And let's just, you and I can agree to disagree, but the fact that we disagree is not at all uncommon, right? It got mixed reviews from critics. There were a number of critics who were like, well, but hey, Jay's rapping like, you know, Jay's opening up, so good job. But if you actually read what they say about the music, there's a lot of, well, it's okay, it's cool. You know, it's not like this was, there were people who were like, oh my goodness, this is amazing. And there were people who were like, eh, it's cool.
What critic did you hear not give this album a good review?
Now you're going to make me go into it.
I don't even remember. I honestly don't even remember.
You think I'm the only one?
I think you're in a very, very small boat. That boat is super small, bro.
I'm cool with it.
Oh, no. Who got that? What? Oh, my God.
Now you're listening to Get Rich or Die Trying tonight.
I totally am in my head.
Many Men is so dope.
That's one of those songs that I never have to hear again.
Really?
It's classic. I've just heard it to death.
It's Patiently Waiting. That's one of M's best, like, beats, right?
I mean, out of the three good ones that he made, sure.
What are the good beats?
I don't see now.
See, don't push. I like Don't Push Me. Yeah, because now it's like, what's Eminem's production discography?
Yep, we're looking it up right
Is there now. Such a thing?
Yeah, it's on Wiki.
I'm sure. Oh, there it is, production discography. Okay.
Okay. You've got The Way I Am and Stan.
Right. Now, Stan is... Mark the 45 King. Why is he's a co-producer? Let's be honest. And the same for The Way I Am.
Okay.
Purple Pills.
No.
It was
dope at the time.
Yeah. Lose Yourself.
Lose Yourself is classic.
Sing for the Moment is classic.
Sing for the Moment. Yeah. There's one.
At the time, Cleaning Out My Closet. Everybody loved that record.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's about where he produced the record for Obie Trice called Jamaican Girl.
Oh, wait. Hits the Fan? That's a dope record, right?
Yeah, but it's got a really annoying hook. The beat is.
I forgot about Lloyd Banks on Fire.
That's Kwame. That's not M.
See, but M's credited. This is what I'm saying. Going through his discography is a little, you know.
Yeah. What about Not Afraid?
You can just stop right there.
What about
Jimmy Crack Coroner?
What about Throw That from Slaughterhouse?
Stop it.
Which might be one of the five worst songs in.
Oh, Hammer Dance. These are terrible, right?
Hammer Dance is A-Rab, though.
See? But he gets credits.
Yeah, that's crazy. Okay.
I forgot about Devil's Night. Oh, you know what's the record on here?
American Psycho.
Thank you. And see, Eminem produced that.
Okay, there's one. Right. There's another one.
How is that not on this list?
I don't know.
Oh, those are singles. Hold on. Go further down.
There we go.
Oh, no. Goodness.
Yeah, because you got Renegade. I thought he produced more records on Marshall Mathers LP. Ish on You? I used to love that beat.
Don't Approach Me, I used to like a lot, but I mean, yeah. Renegade, we got to talk about that, right?
Yeah, Renegade. Love Me?
Oh, yeah.
Places to Go? Rabbit Run?
Man, that 8 Mile.
That's some joints.
It's peak Eminem.
Yeah, it has some joints. Go to Sleep was too much. I need to hear Eminem and DMX in 2003.
Oh, God. Moment of clarity. No. Oh, no. One Day at a Time and Running. Oh, God. That Tupac Resurrection soundtrack.
Yeah. Do you remember Eminem produced an entire Tupac album?
We all forgot. Oh, yeah. I'm So Hood, My Buddy.
My Buddy was hard, though.
Got Some Teeth. Oh, Average Man. You know, that first Obie Trice record.
Wait, what was the other Obie Trice record?
It was Got Some Teeth was the first one, but there was...
Got Some Teeth.
Oh, Don't Come... Was it... Wait. He didn't produce O.
Yeah, he didn't do O. That was...
Hold on.
Was that Dre?
That's Dre,
Or was that Mailman and one of Dre's cronies?
That's
who
Dre.
Who did Cry Now for Obie? Is that on here?
That might have been the second album, I think.
Yeah, that was the second album. Like that. Remember that Stat Quo and Dr. Dre freestyle from the Green Lantern tape?
Yes. Wait, there's a Timbo record on here? I don't remember Timbo. I do remember Timbo and Obie Trice. Oh, the setup. Oh, man.
The setup. Mm-hmm.
I need to make a Dre, like, 02 to 04 playlist.
You might.
That could be mean. We were talking about Jay-Z.
We were talking about Jay-Z, and now we've got...
Let me talk about it. So the whole point he was making, he got really defensive about the criticism he received for Meek's album being free on Tidal.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I wanted to say about that, and I thought he was a little disingenuous to not point this out, because he's like, well, Spotify does it and it counts every week. Spotify shows ads. So they are getting revenue off the free tier, which is sort of the point. Not quite the same as people paying for it, but they are getting revenue. Whereas what they did with Meek's album was they just put it up on the website. They might as well just put out the Z-Share link. Do you know what I mean? Like, to me, maybe I'm slicing here, but there's a bit of a difference. And I don't even think he had to go all that. I mean, and to get all defense, I don't know. And he was like, well, you know, Meek's label asked us to do this. Like, Meek isn't a Roc Nation artist. Like, I just felt that entire conversation was treating people like they were dumb and didn't know how streaming worked. But that might be me just being extra nerdy. I'll admit that.
Could be.
But I'm like, come on, man. There's a difference between Spotify having a ad-supported free tier and a Roc Nation artist randomly popping up totally in front of the paywall. You just go to Tidal and you just listen to Meek's album for free, and we're going to count that. That's not the same thing. I don't know. So we talked about this on the last episode, how we can maybe compare Jay to Dave Chappelle a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And his answer to the controversy about the, you know, a little bit of, I thought it was a little bit, I didn't think it was that much, but a little bit of brushback he got about the Jewish line on 444, which, I mean, I'm going to play Clockstradamus. I called that immediately when we talked about it on the show. And there was no controversy at the time. Nobody cared. But I heard that and I was like, yeah, someone's going to get him for that.
To me, still doesn't make sense.
Okay. So to me, I thought, like, I think this is actually the most, like, Chappelle-like that he kind of is. Because, like, he was basically saying something effective, like, well, you know, why aren't Jewish people mad about all the stereotypes he talks about for black people, you know, in the story of OJ? He's like, that's hypocritical of them. And I don't know. I think rightly or wrongly in this culture, we have sort of an expectation of, like, first of all, if you're going to have a song where you're talking about stereotypes, whether we like it or not, when you talk about your own race or ethnicity or religion or whatever, your own quote unquote stereotypes, that's one thing. When you start talking about stereotypes for other groups, that's a whole different world. And that's where Dave Chappelle gets into trouble too.
So, stereotypes, the word stereotype already has a negative connotation to it.
Sure.
So all he was saying was, because he went on to further say that he watched a neighborhood across the street from Marcy that was a predominantly Jewish neighborhood go from basically having nothing to flourishing just based off of them working together.
That's right.
And he would like to see Black people just institute that same practice.
That's right. And his explanation made far more sense, but the line on the song didn't sound good, especially when you consider that right now what's happening in America, where there is this whole quote unquote alt-right movement that is happening, where they are bringing back around old stereotypes of Jewish people own the banks and the big businesses and control the world, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So people are on extra alert for that right now. And nobody thinks that Jay is all right or anything like that. But it was just a careless line. And Jay is Jay-Z. And I don't think he likes this, but it's true that when you're an artist of his stature, you can't have careless lines.
I still don't think that's a careless line.
You don't think it's a careless line?
No. I don't think it was disrespectful. I don't think it was anything crazy. What's the line?
Let's pull it up.
Let's pull it up.
Probably gonna get to it before. Nah, I'm working. Movement is moving. Oh, you ever wonder why Jewish people own all the property in America? This is how they did it. That is a very specific stereotype of Jewish people that was perpetrated by Nazis as a way in the 30s for blaming Jewish people for the plight of what happened to Germany. It has been used by neo-Nazis in the U.S. of, oh, the Jewish people own all this and they control banking and they control Hollywood. Like, that is a very, if what he meant was the notion of, oh, the Jewish community was able to prosper by working with each other, that is not what that line says at all.
I don't know. I don't see it. Okay. I get it, but I don't see it.
Okay.
I can understand that, but I say that it could have been a whole heck of a lot worse than.
Of course it could. It was just a careless line. And all he had to do was say, he was almost like, he just couldn't say, you know what, could have said it better. That's all he had to say. But instead, he kind of went on this whole thing about how, like, there were certain lines where he would be like, that's hip hop, as though that means something.
I mean,
like, he gets some sort of pass to say whatever he wants. I didn't get that.
He said that in the context of the Future line.
That's
which,
right.
Which was 100%. A testament to what I've said on this show. We talked about last week how I said our country's really like sensitive. That is a prime example of that. That's wordplay, and Future all of a sudden goes, and then all these other rappers go and make it about a money phone. All he was saying was, in the future, niggas playing football with your son. Like, that was it. Like, you have a step, your son has a stepfather. That's just factual.
Yep.
It is what it is. So, like, even if you feel as somebody who has two kids who both have stepfathers. I get it. I can't get upset when my son calls his stepfather dad. He has two dads. If that man stepped up and is doing things in that house that warrants him to call that man dad, what am I going to do? Tell him no? I'm your dad. I mean, I am your dad. But I also knew that when your mother and I broke up, that was going to happen. So Future can't get mad at something like that. And then when somebody decides to turn into wordplay, you're Future.
No.
You're one of the biggest hip hop artists out.
See, your
life is on display, and you got Shade Room and all these other Instagram and all these websites doing all this stuff, following you around, taking pictures, TMZ, whatever, whatever. But then a rapper that you just did a song with says a line, and now all of a sudden you want to get your panties in a bunch. Like, come on, man.
I don't know. I mean, I think people will get stuff in a bunch. I mean, how many like quote unquote beefs have happened over a dumb disagreement over a line?
And that's another, and that's the other side of it's just hip hop. Future's not the first person to catch feelings over something.
The difference is that Jay, for some reason, thinks that like people aren't going to catch feelings. Like, he's offended that they're offended. Just get over it. Don't either back down or don't back down. But instead, he's like beside himself that somebody could possibly be mad about this when entire beefs have been built on less.
I don't know. I'm offended that people get offended.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You think people are too sensitive?
Yes. God, yes. 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 People are really quick to jump the gun and that's the bad side of social media. You're really seeing that right now is like everybody feels like they have to have an opinion about everything right after it happens. I'm offended at the fact that you were not taking the time to gather all of your facts and then make an educated statement. You're not being responsible with your platform because you want likes and retweets and you feel like you have to say something. You don't. You don't. Not everything. Because then when the facts come out and you're like, oh, oops, who's that on? But the crazy thing about our country is that something, you'll move on to the next thing. So by the time the facts come out, we're like, oh, yeah, okay, whatever. Biggest fight in the world happened on Saturday. 3 days later, not even a peep. And I mean, granted, in this case, it's actually warranted because there's an incredibly dangerous storm in Houston right now. But say that storm ends by the weekend. Bet money we're not talking about it by the following weekend. Unless something else happens in regards to it. If the water just goes down and, you know, the city begins to rebuild, we'll be talking about something else. Nah, so it won't even matter.
They're in trouble, man. It's pretty bad.
They are in trouble. But are we going to give it the attention that it deserves so that we can get resources and all that stuff in there? I don't trust us. I just don't.
I don't know. I mean, I understand what you're saying. I think part of it too is I think we're living in a time where there's a lot of crazy stuff going on. And we've gotten, whether we like it or not, people have a platform now where people have always been dumb or smart or whatever they are. We've just now given a whole bunch of people the same microphone, right? We have, just like in music, how we have lessened the barrier of entry. We've also lessened the barrier of entry to publishing, right? Everybody can publish now. Congratulations. So now we get to hear the thoughts and opinions of everybody. And so that means we're going to hear from some people who we never would have had a chance to. And we're going to hear wonderful voices that never would have been allowed through the old gatekeepers. But it also means, just like with music, we're going to hear from people who shouldn't have a megaphone because they're dumb. But that's the way it goes. It's the democratization of everything.
Yeah.
Right? As a country, we have gone down this path of basically saying, nah, we don't need experts. We know best. And we have the president to prove it. Right?
Yep. Yep.
And that's where we're at.
Yep.
It's not just social. I mean, it's not just news. It's not just music. It's everything. Right?
Yeah. Okay. So what else with Jay?
I don't know. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that really got me. I don't think I'll have anything else. What do you got? What hit you?
Yeah, I mean, the rest of the stuff was just, oh, hey, that's cool. You know, talking about Blue making the album and, you know, how I did like, as an artist, it was really cool to hear that they did the marketing on the fly where Jay thought that, you know, he was going to be able to be mysterious for about 2 weeks. And then they found out, you know, Streets found out that night, next morning. And so having to adjust that, you know, as an artist, I've always kind of like, all right, what are we going to do next? Like, you just kind of fly by the seat of your pants. And now with this album, I'm planning. But then to see, I mean, the biggest rapper in the world flying by the seat of his pants with his music, that was cool to hear. There's just a lot of little cool moments. See what I'm saying? Like, I just thought the interview was really good to just hear Jay talk because you don't really hear Jay talk. I loved his, Juan Epstein interview he did around, was that Blueprint 3 when he did that? I think it was. That was a great interview, but this is up there. This was up there. I loved hearing, and I didn't get to listen to it again, but I loved hearing his perspective on mental health. The last 30 minutes of that, after they get into like the albums and stuff, the last 30 minutes where he talks about mental health is fascinating. But I don't remember anything he said. I just remember listening to it in the car and being like, wow, this is really cool to hear.
He had an interesting line. And I'm not even, believe me, I'm not trying to bait you because this is something where I could see you going in on. Just want to get that out of the way. Where he talks about how his attempts to find religion.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And how he just described himself as spiritual.
Yeah. I mean, that's what people do. It's really safe to say, well, I'm spiritual. I'm a little bit of this, a little bit of that. You know, I'm kind of here, not there. It's a safe space to go.
As he said, you know, you go into a place of worship. What do they all have? An altar. And that was sort of the way he framed it.
That was one of those things where the duality of it was, that's really dumb, one. But two, like people talk about what he said on Legacy, but on Bam, he starts the verse off with saying, Sean was on that gospel-ish. I was on the total freaking opposite. So, and then in the interview, he pretty much says for a period of his life, he identified as a Christian, but he identified because his family identified as a Christian. But then he saw what his grandfather, right, was doing as a path. It's like for Jay to be Illuminati figure number one in the eyes of many of the YouTubers and the Christians. Shout out to y'all who, and I was included in that. I can't front, like 2009, 2010, scouring YouTube. Look at how he tilted his hand.
It's a good thing.
He's a devil worshiper.
It's a good thing we weren't doing the show.
Oh my God. But I always love to hear, and this is probably why I'm in school for what I'm in school for. I just love to hear how people come to conclusions. He decided to disassociate himself with Christianity because he saw contradictions. I get it. As someone who has been planting a church for the last seven, eight years, I've seen a lot of contradictions. I myself have been a contradiction. So I understand, and I've seen the ramifications of saying one thing and doing something else. You know what I'm saying? Like, people have left my church because of things that I've done. I get it. And I don't fault anybody for taking that posture. So I'm not mad at them for it. I think it was really interesting that you go and then you just kind of like contort your way around it. He still sounds really uneasy, and he still seems unsettled. And so, of course, me, I'm like, well, shoot, I would love to have a conversation with you and answer any questions that you want to have. But, you know, I probably won't ever get that chance. But I get it. And I think that more Christians get people like Jay and who feel like them more than the people who feel like that will give Christians credit for. You got everything that's going on with Joel Osteen right now, and I'm just seeing more Christian bashing than normal. It's just turned up. It's just plugging all this. And I get it. Most of us have had really crappy church experiences, but the church is full of sick, broken people. So sick and broken people can only give you sick and broken things. That's why we don't look to ourselves. So I get it. But at the same time, I also want people who feel like that to understand our perspective. And even if you don't ever join this side, if you don't ever come to Death Row, like, at least attempt to understand where we come from and why we believe what we believe in. And don't assume that your experience is all of ours and that we are not enlightened and we're stupid and we're in the dark. No, it could be an instance where we actually walked through what you experienced, and we saw maybe a bigger picture. We saw the other side of that. Why was your father doing that? Why was your grandfather doing that to that? What was it? Was it just a girl in the church, or was it a family member? Did they specify that?
No, I don't think they did.
Okay. So why your grandfather was saying one thing, but then still, you know, maybe it was extramarital, whatever it was he was doing with the girl. Why was he doing that? Your why, as you're unpacking your why, and you did this with your father on Adness, now you need to understand your grandfather's why. Where did that come from? What didn't he deal with, and why? And for his reason for dealing with that, it caused you to just completely shut down this entire ideology. No. People are just, and I said this in my video, and I'm going to shut up. People, we are so layered and multifaceted. People are freaking interesting, man. We're just interesting. We are so fascinating. How we come to conclusions, where our lives come from. All of us have dealt with trauma. All of us have run from trauma. All of us have these experiences that have shaped our lives. And like, dealing with them, some instances, our reason or our definition of dealing with them is not dealing with them at all. A lot of us repress. A lot of us suppress. But I mean, whatever. I could really go on about that for years because I'm going to school for that. And then also being in ministry. So that's like, I could talk about that. I could talk about the church and mental health all day because it's so fascinating. And I think it's, I don't know, man. I just have a different perspective and appreciation for people. And I don't say appreciation, but like empathy for people. Because we've all been through some stuff. And we're a lot more similar than we are different. I don't think we give our fellow man enough credit that we're a lot closer and a lot more alike than we think we are. But I'm done.
I think I've said this on the show before, but you've heard the term narcissism of minor differences, right?
Narcissism of what?
Minor differences.
No, but that makes sense the minute you say it.
So the general idea being the more similar we get, the more we sort of focus on the small things that might be different about us. So you might have this subculture of folks who are really into this one particular thing, but they will still find the smallest thing to obsess about to divide this community that otherwise to the outside world looks to be 99.9% the same. Mm. Right. And it just goes deeper the deeper you go. the more into a particular niche you go, you will still find a way to do it.
Sure. Sure. I agree with that.
Is that, was that a preview of what people can expect at the Even If I Lose experience?
Somewhat. 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 You can get your tickets now. At Armand Wake Up Instagram and Twitter.
I'll be playing some role at the show. I might be photographer, might be, who knows.
No, man, Doc might be. Here's what's going to happen with Doc. Because I already know, like, some people that are going that are big fans of the show. Mm. People are going to hit you with the Coming to America. I hope you know that. It is you.
No.
I cannot believe it. It's going to happen. I don't think, have you gone outside or been somewhere in public and somebody comes to you and be like, hey, aren't you Doc from Clock Radio Speakers? Have you experienced that yet?
Not from the show, but from when I used to do the music thing in New York more.
Okay.
That happened on a couple of occasions and I was like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Clock Radio Speakers is a different animal, dude.
Okay.
It's a different animal.
Don't worry.
You might have experienced it a little bit at the Philly show, but I think
people are coming for you, man.
They are, but like when I send out the tweet and say, hey, Doc's coming, I've already got like two or three people in my head who are gonna like freak out.
You got the bad signal, it's just S, not a Z, is the logo. No, I'm just kidding.
it's a S with a circle and a slash through it and a giant Z over it. Yep.
No, it's Z with the sort. Yeah, anyway. Anything else we want to talk about, man?
Nah, I think, yeah, it's, oh my God, it's kind of late. Nah, I'm good.
It's kind of late. All right, well, thank you everybody for listening to this episode of Clock Radio Speakers. As always, go to clockradiospeakers.com. Check us out on Twitter at CRS Podcast. Like Armand said, should go pick up tickets. If you can't be in there in person, get the tickets for streaming. Or is Even If I Lose experience coming Friday the 8th? Is that right?
Yep. Man. Friday, September 8th. Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know if we'll be back next week. If not, then the week after we will no doubt be recapping the concert and whatever else is going on. So thank you, everybody.